Hi, I'm Neil Stavem. Thanks for checking out this podcast from Connecting Faith. You can hear the show live each weekday at noon on Faith Radio. And there are many more podcasts for this and all our Faith Radio shows available online. Our web address is myfaithradio.com. And thanks for your gifts to this listener-supported ministry. Enjoy the podcast.
Always expect something good on your lunch hour. Connecting Faith with Life.
Hi, thanks for tuning in to Connecting Faith. I'm Neil Stavem. Welcome to June 2. Good to have you along. Ted Ross at the controls. Chris is at the phones. And Ted, we're in June, and
yeah. The
twins are in first place.
How about that? I did not predict you would say that about a month ago.
No. So Adrian Peterson's back.
Yeah. Right?
So, I mean,
it's amazing.
Life is good.
If you're a Minnesota sports fan, it's seemingly
and
good, I guess.
Sure, yeah, right. And I mean, if you're our friends in Madison, you know, the Brewers aren't doing very well, so why not, you know, jump on the Twins bandwagon?
Sure, come on over.
We'll let you in.
They're coming to town this weekend, by the way. A little border battle.
That's right.
Going on, so
that's true.
People are excited.
Yes. All right. Well, we've got it's June. It's also a time when, of course, there's graduations going on, school getting out, and it may be that you have someone that you know or in your household or that you are looking at summer work and wondering, is the summer job a thing of the past? We're going to find out about that in a minute with today's guest. I do want to mention that June also brings a couple other great opportunities for us here on Faith Radio. We're in the midst of a partnership with FEBC, Far East Broadcasting Company. They broadcast in 46 countries, 102 languages, over 2 million listeners last year alone. And they've got a campaign to provide shortwave or radios, fixed tune radios, to people in access areas where they don't have access, ready access to a radio. So for a gift of $30, you provide one radio, and every radio has the power to reach, you know, 25, 30, maybe even 100 people in a community or village. And the goal is to provide 400 radios this month. So
wonderful. Making a huge impact in Asia, I know, specifically.
Oh, yeah, Southeast Asia, Asia-Pacific, and just some amazing stories. And you'll be hearing some of those throughout the month. But just want to mention that to you. We've got details about that on our website. If you go to myfaithradio.com, you can see and click on the link there and get involved if you would be willing to partner with us in that way. And you'll be making a significant impact for all eternity. Also, too, I want to just say thank you. It's the end of the fiscal year at the end of June, and so if you are an ongoing regular supporter, we appreciate your generosity, and if you've maybe made a pledge but haven't fulfilled that yet, you know, doing that by the end of the month would help us a lot, too. So thanks for that. Let's jump in with today's conversation. Our guest is a return guest. I always enjoy talking with Dan Miller, who is president of 48 Days LLC, and Dan specializes in creative thinking for increased personal and business success. He believes that meaningful work blends our natural skills and abilities, our unique personality traits, and our dreams and passions. And Dan is active in helping individuals redirect careers, evaluate new income sources, and achieve balanced living. He believes a clear sense of direction can help us become all that God designed us to be, and he's a best-selling author. In fact, we're going to reference the book that has been updated and revised here in the past couple of years or so. It's 48 Days to the Work You Love, Preparing for the New Normal, which is certainly the world in which we live in today's economics. He's also written No More Mondays, and he co-wrote with his son, Wisdom Meets Passion. And we're happy to have Dan back on with us. He was just talking before the show, up to 12 grandchildren now. And so congratulations, and a couple more on the way.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, it's never gets old, the delight of having grandchildren around.
Well, so the good news is that you've got lots of wisdom and experience at sort of all ages and stages of your work career, and I know that you've been coaching and encouraging people along the way. And I thought we'd just by the way, do we have some copies of Dan's book to give away? Four copies, I think, of 48 Days to the Work You Love, and this really is a great resource, and recommend it to you. And when we have those resources available, we do a drawing at the end of the hour. So if you'd like to sign up for that, you give us a call at 877-93-FAITH. That's 877-933-2484. And you can sign up for the drawing for a copy of 48 Days to the Work You Love. And have a question, a comment, you're welcome to join the broadcast as well. So Dan, we just mentioned about the summer work idea. Let's start with that. Is the summer job a thing of the past? I mean, if you have a teen in your house or a grandchild that's, you know, looking for work, are they going to find anything after school's out?
Yes, it's a great time to be looking for work. It's one of those times when you see signs everywhere. Now, I live just south of Nashville, Tennessee, but when we drive around out here, I mean, I am just amazed at the signs in windows and yards again and again and again. Now hiring, now hiring. So in terms of just being a summer job where somebody gets some great first work experience, it shouldn't be any problem at all. And those kind of jobs, you really don't have to do a lot of preparation. You don't have to do a fancy resume and send out and do a job search. You just walk in. I mean, I've seen it happen again and again. I was sitting in Taco Bell recently. Young guy walked in. He had picked up a application the day before but hadn't talked to the manager. He walked in. And in a 3-minute conversation, she said, "Can you start tomorrow?" I talked to him. I grabbed him before he got out the door. I said, "Did that really happen? Is that the first time you saw the manager? You walked in here, you know, just wearing shorts, tattoos on your legs, and you got a job offer that fast?" He said, "Yeah." So I talked to the manager. I said, "Why did you make that decision so quickly?" She said, "He was very straightforward, looked me in the eye, talked very respectfully. She said, I need people. I'm willing to take him on right now." So I think that's pretty indicative of the way it is out there. Now, we're not talking $80,000 a year jobs, but something where they can make $10, $15 an hour, absolutely. Get out there, walk in, smile, look people in the eye. You're going to get job offers immediately.
Wow. That should be encouraging, really, for moms and dads maybe trying to encourage their kids to put down the video games and go looking anyway, right?
Absolutely. Yeah. You got to be confident, hold your shoulders back, look people in the eye. But great personality will get you job offers, even if you don't have skill. They can train you for skill. But if you got a great personality, it's going to open doors immediately.
Let's talk about, if we're talking a little sort of summer work, a lot of discussion these days about the minimum wage debate. So be interested in your observations about this sort of mandated income floor. A good thing or not such a good thing? What pros and cons? What are your thoughts?
No, it's not a good thing. There are no winners when we mandate what people have to be paid. The market ought to determine what people will be paid. And they'll be paid a fair wage. I mean, here where I live, in just south of Nashville, nobody's paid minimum wage. It's a non-issue. You can't get people to come to work for $7.25 here where I live. So people have to pay what will attract and keep good people. And that's the way it should be. Mandating that somebody, even if they're a lousy worker, ought to be paid $15 an hour just because they showed up is a horrible idea. It's an artificial solution that doesn't help anybody. And all it does is it'll just pop up the price of those very products that those people are struggling to afford now. So when they go out for a hamburger, instead of it being $3, it'll be $6. I mean, nobody wins with that. It's an artificial solution that doesn't help anybody.
There's another sort of side to this, too, is that it seems like there's a growing number of people that are no longer looking for work. I mean, unemployment is down overall, I think, nationally, but there's some higher numbers of those that have sort of given up. Talk about maybe some factors behind that trend.
Well, there is. There's actually a category called discouraged workers with the Bureau of Labor Statistics that I get reports every month that show people who have quit looking because they're convinced there really is nothing there. But, again, these are government figures. Government figures don't really portray accurately what's happening out here. A lot of people who, having been discouraged in finding a job like they had 20 years ago, with guaranteed benefits, retirement plans, medical coverage, all those things, they've gotten realistic about a changing workplace. So instead of looking for a job, they've created something on their own. We're seeing massive numbers of people who just start little businesses. It's never been easier than now, never been cheaper than now to just start something on your own. So a lot of those people that the government shows as totally unemployed, discouraged workers, they're not really sitting around just watching the sun go down. They're actively involved in doing things, but those don't show up on those government statistics. There's a lot of things that don't show up there. I mean, they have a hard time tracking little businesses that have three or four people involved because they're under the radar. So there's a lot of activity that I think is very positive. We're seeing a shift from the big monolithic companies to the little grassroots kind of companies again, a little mom and pop kind of companies. Boy, people are discovering, wow, they can have a little eBay business or do something, you know, fulfilled by Amazon, where they go to garage sales and buy materials, put them up on Craigslist or back to Amazon and make a reasonable living doing that. Those are things that aren't really reflected very accurately in government statistics. Things aren't as bad as what we may be led to believe because of the news. I mean, turn off the TV and you'll be more optimistic immediately.
It's probably just a, you know, good life perspective in general, I think, for a lot of things. So are these little businesses sort of real, I guess, you know, legitimate businesses, or are they just ways that people are just finding some income stream or just sort of little secondary side things? I mean, are maybe it's both and.
Well, it's both and. I mean, we've got a young couple who lived down the street from us. He was a school teacher, making about $35,000 a year. You know, responsible, nice family and all that. Well, he discovered that he could buy cameras on eBay and buy them in bulk. So he may buy 20 of last year's model, brand new cameras, but just buy them in bulk at a deep, deep discount. He puts them up individually on Amazon and sells them back to people who are interested in photography. A lot of photography students he's discovered is a real big market. He's on track to make $200,000 this year in net profit. Totally bypassing, you know, five times what he was making as a school teacher. Is that just a sideline business, a little hobby? No, that's a pretty serious business. But at the same time, he has more time freedom, flexibility. They travel, bless relatives and friends of theirs because of their abundance and resources that they have. That's the reality of what's available out there. And as I stand here in my office, Neil, I'm looking out at this beautiful carving in a cedar tree of an eagle outstretched wings are about 6 feet across. That was done by a lady who had a previous job, was frustrated with that job, remembered how much she had enjoyed working in wood with her daddy when she was a little girl. Well, instead of just doing, you know, sitting at the park bench on Saturday mornings, you know, whittling whistles, she turned that into sculpting out of wood. Her works are magnificent. I've referred a whole lot of people to her. You know, I paid her $1,000 to do the one she did right outside my office here. But there are things like that that people would never think of as real jobs or careers. You would never have somebody as the career counselor when you're a sophomore in college sit down with you and say, gee, I think you ought to grow up to be a tree carver. Those things don't appear. But more and more, I experience people who are finding very unique, individualized opportunities that match how God has gifted them, and they just knock it out of the park in terms of making it a real viable business, yes, with a real income, everything they would expect.
Coming up in a moment, we'll find out more about how do we get to those places, those career opportunities that we'd never think of perhaps as a real job or a real business or real career. We'll get some wise advice and counsel from leading vocational thinker and best-selling author Dan Miller. Helps us understand and organize our God-given skills, personality traits, values, dreams, and passions as it comes to finding work that we love. 48 Days to the Work You Love is the title of his best-selling book. It's been revised and expanded. The subtitle is Preparing for the New Normal. We'll talk about what that new normal is and get to your questions as well. You want to join the conversation? 877-933-2484. It's 877-933-FAITH. Or if you prefer, you can drop us a note. Go to myfaithradio.com, click on the Connecting Faith show page, and there's an email link right there. You can submit your question that way, and we'll continue our discussion. We talk work today with Dan Miller on Connecting Faith. Yeah, it's you know, it's not really off to work so much anymore, is it, Ted? I mean, you know, it's like as Dan was saying, you could you know, set it home in your jammies and buy a product on eBay and sell it on Amazon.
That commute from the kitchen to the office.
Sure, that's right. Well, we're not going to talk about it. Dan doesn't have his jammies on today, but he does work from home. Dan Miller is the president of 48 Days LLC, and he's been a career coach and a counselor and best-selling author. We're talking about his book, 48 Days to the Work You Love, Preparing for the New Normal. We've got some copies to give away. You can sign up for one, be in the drawing for that, and join the conversation. Maybe you've got a career idea and you'd like to just run it by Dan. Give us a call at 877-93-FAITH. It's 877-933-2484. So, Dan, just kind of reminded me, as you were giving an illustration about a former teacher who's now selling cameras, it's sort of become a facilitator. I mean, there are different, I guess, kinds of work. Maybe just to, how do we decide if we're looking to transition? Are there sort of categories we should look at? Say, well, do I want to actually be doing something with my hands, like wood carving, or is it just kind of using my brain, perhaps?
No, it's very much trusting your heart to start with. It's almost ironic in how we look at the best approach to determine what your career focus ought to be. In 48 Days, I talk about the fact that 85% of the process of having the confidence of proper direction in your work life comes from looking inward first. So it's not a matter of seeing who's hiring, where the hottest business opportunities are. None of those things really are likely to give you a long-term satisfaction. So the first thing is look inward. Am I gifted in terms of skills and abilities? What kind of personality has God given me? Am I real outgoing, extroverted? Am I inward? Am I shy? Am I better with ideas, things, working with my hands, as you mentioned? Those are all things we should know about ourselves. And then the third area behind skills and abilities and personality traits is what I call values, dreams, and passions. What are those things that you're naturally drawn to? And this is where we get the value of a little life experience. Somebody who's 45 and looking at this has a whole lot more depth of experience to look at, and they should have more confidence about what that focus should look like. But it's in knowing ourselves we then can create a clear focus and then decide the 15%, which is the application. Am I best suited to go get a job knowing what I know about myself or to start something on my own? I mean, that's the easy part, really. The difficult, challenging part that a lot of people miss is looking at themselves first, then get a real clear picture of what they bring to the table so they can go out in the marketplace with their head held high and shoulders back and be prepared with confidence to share with the world what it is that they're bringing.
Dan, you've used the word confidence a couple of times. I know in the book, 48 Days to the Work You Love, you address the issue of failure and that actually has a lot of value when it comes to future success. Talk about failure, because this is an area where a lot of self-esteem is wrapped up in our work.
It is, and we have to change the way that we view failure. If somebody loses a job, it may not have anything to do with their competence, their reliability, or qualifications. It's just a part of the workplace. But there's a tendency to see that as a failure and all of a sudden to have our self-confidence wounded, so we're afraid and embarrassed about getting out and telling people what we do. No, it's just a part of natural life. In the same way, if somebody starts a little business or they get involved in a multi-level marketing company or they get a little business opportunity and it doesn't work out the way they thought it should, that's not a failure. That's continued learning. I had a young couple recently I worked with who two different times, sent over $10,000 to one of these late-night TV invention building companies where you send your invention. Well, they did. Their ideas were absolutely worthless, but they had one of these nasty companies keep baiting them, and they spent over $20,000. Well, they were mortified and embarrassed. And I said, hey, that's okay. I know kids who are right down the road here at Vanderbilt University. They're spending $35,000 a year, getting what they hope is an education. You got a valuable education that you can use. Just pull yourself together, move forward with the confidence that you just paid for part of your education. Well, they did that. They took that approach and moved forward. But those things, those little bumps in the road that sometimes people see as failures, those are not meant to keep us down or to keep us from ever trying again. That's very legitimately part of the learning experience to get to what will be ultimately our success. I mean, there's nobody we look at who has extraordinary success that didn't go through some of those little things that we consider failure. And I certainly have. My gosh, I've had some major bumps in the road, but they taught me invaluable lessons that opened the door to new opportunities that I enjoy today.
Well, so maybe just to, as an example in your life, you know, when you have a major bump in the road and it's a financial setback, I mean, how do you handle the next the days, the weeks, the months? I mean, obviously you have to get back up and get going again, but you know, though that's kind of a, you know, a sore time, isn't it, where you're really you're doing some grieving.
Well, it is. It is, but I'll give you a quick example, Neil, and I'm very open about this, but you know, there was a time a few years back where I had had a lot of little successes and I kind of leveraged those together, overextended myself, borrowed too much money, all those stupid things that young entrepreneurs do, and ended up after public auction in one of my businesses, flat broke the next morning, not only flat broke, but about $430,000 in debt to creditors, including the IRS. No way to walk away from that. Well, being, I hope, a person of integrity, I did not choose bankruptcy. I just looked at that and said, well, I've got to figure out a way to unravel this mess that I created. Now, at that point, I had a couple options. I was employable. I had a master's degree in clinical psychology. I'd been working as an adjunct professor at one of the universities. I could pull in there, do that, just have a respectable, predictable job and make $60,000-$70,000 a year. But I looked at how am I going to take care of this financial mess that I've created, as well as provide for a family with three children at the time. How am I going to do that? And there was no way that that made sense. So I did. I jumped right back in the game. No net, no guarantee, but also no ceiling. So I got back in creating my own business, knowing that there were no guarantees, but at least there were big opportunities. And that's the way I approached it. So I didn't just say, well, I screwed up. You know, I'll never take a risk again. I'll never try anything again. No, I got right back in the game with the only thing that would give me a big enough shovel financially to unravel the mess that I had made. And I'm certainly glad that I did. It was also during that period of time that I wrote what is now the 48 Days to the Work You Love. And of course, that book has fueled a lot of opportunities for me as well.
Dan Miller telling us his story. He knows the road that you may be walking and can give some great advice. If you have a question for us today, we're talking about work, careers, vocation, jobs, God's calling on our life. Talking with Dan Miller today, who's president of 48 Days LLC, specializes in creative thinking for increased personal and business success. And looking at meaningful work, author of the book 48 Days to the Work You Love. We've got some copies to give away. You can sign up for the drawing at 877-93-FAITH. It's 877-933-2484. And you can also send us a question if you want to do that online. It's myfaithradio.com. And go to the Connecting Faith show page for your question to Dan. We'll continue in our conversation in just a moment. Again, you're welcome to join us today. It's 877-933-2484. More with Dan Miller, author of 48 Days to the Work You Love, coming up in just a moment. Listening to Connecting Faith. Glad to have you along today. Talking with Dan Miller, president of 48 Days LLC, specializing in creative thinking for increased personal and business success. He holds a master's degree in psychology and draws from his business experience to help others develop more focused, balanced, truly successful lives. And his wife of 40 plus years live in Franklin, Tennessee, at with three children and 12 grandchildren, a couple more on the way. We love talking with Dan, who's written this great book called 48 Days to the Work You Love. In fact, you're just telling me during the break, it's just recently released here, just after the first of the year, the 10th anniversary edition, significantly revised and expanded. So you're going to want to sign up for a copy of that. We've got four to give away. We'll do that at the end of the hour. 877-93-FAITH is our phone number, 877-933-2484. Dan, we got a caller who asked, offered this question, couldn't stay on the line, but she says, in regards to LLCs, which you're president of 48 Days LLC, she says her daughter's interested in starting up her own business and organization. What are the benefits of getting an LLC? Is there a need for professional organizers?
Okay. Well, in regards to an LLC, I mean, that's just a legal entity. I mean, the common ones are a sole proprietorship, an LLC, an S-corp, and a C-corp. There are others, but those are the most common. The reason traditionally to form any kind of a corporation is for liability protection. Now, there are other reasons as well when your income gets to significant levels, but at the beginning stages, that would be the reason. Being an organizer is not a high liability kind of profession. I would say don't complicate things. Just start doing that. And once you have enough success that you're making $50,000, $60,000 a year, then look at if you need to structure the organization a little bit differently. I would doubt that even at that point it would really be a necessity. So in that regard, nah, just keep it simple. Just start doing what you want to do and let your success build. Don't complicate starting a business with expensive legal things at the front end. Just start doing it and let the success fund those other parts of the business you want to expand. Are there a need for professional organizers? Yeah, absolutely. That's a real hot topic these days. There are a lot of busy professionals. There's a lot of people who are working out of their homes, as you alluded to a couple times already, and who are not good at organizing. That's not their skill set, and they need help in doing that. Sure. Position yourself well. Let people know what it is you do. That's a great work to go into.
We'll get to our calls in a moment, but I did want to follow up because you talked about just start doing what you love to do. I'm wondering, you know, do some people say, well, that's not going to meet my financial needs, or you know, how do we sort of balance that out? You know, if we've got a maybe full time work, say I really need to put my full energies into this to really make it go, but there's always that time of uncertainty, as you say, with no net.
Well, there has to be three legs to the stool. That's a great question, Neil, and something that a lot of people ignore, especially a lot of people who are called, feel called to ministry or God or humanitarian kind of work, where they have the passion for it. They really do. And they have some talent in doing well what they want to do. Those two are not enough. That's fall over every time. The third leg of the stool is a market, or what I call economic affirmation. Are people willing to pay for what it is that you want to do? Now, there's an old adage. There was a book written back in the 70s. Marsha Shenatar wrote a book, you know, Do What You Love and the Money Will Follow. And we hear about that a lot. Well, just do what you love. You know, and I'm in a town where there's a lot of artistic people, artists, sculptors, musicians by the thousands here in Nashville, Tennessee. And, you know, they're told, well, just do what you love, you know, and somehow money will magically show up. Well, it doesn't really work that way. So what I do is I take that old adage, do what you love and the money will follow, and just give a little twist to it. Do what you love and follow the money. You have to be strategic about it. If you want to put water wells in Ethiopia, that's wonderful. You may have the passion and talent for that, but unless you figure out an economic model to make that work, you're going to be frustrated. There are people who are called to do wonderful things, but if they don't create an economic model for it, they end up angry at God because they thought God called them to do something. No, they need to open their eyes and create a model. So if you want to be a musician, I'm totally for you. If you want to be an artist, I love working with artists and helping them develop a real business in doing what they're doing. So it doesn't mean that you can't do what you love, even if it seems unrealistic and impractical to other people. You just have to be intentional and strategic about how you make that work. You know, I, as an author, I mean, we know that 95% of authors never make more than $40,000 a year. Well, that could be really discouraging. You know, why would I try that? Or why would I go into art? Because we know we hear about starving artists. But to me, that's not a deterrent. I simply ask myself, wow, how tough can it be to put myself into the 5% of authors? All I have to do is look around at what authors do typically and be willing to do things they aren't doing. That's served me really well. I love writing. Writing has served me very, very well in every way that you can imagine. But it's because I'm very intentional about how I handle the financial components of it. So it's not just sitting in the cubicle, writing wonderful things, pushing it out there and hope somebody shows up. No, it's by building a business that validates my writing.
Let's take Rita's call. She's on line two and has a question about gifts and talents and the careers. Rita, you're on with Dan Miller. Go ahead.
Hi. Yeah, I am. Just a little background. I am just coming off of the mission field. I have had a career in ministry and now trying to translate that into the real world, so to speak. We are trying to figure out how to establish ourselves to help our kids in the transitional years of college and whatnot. And like I said, we're no longer in full-time ministry. And so how to translate, you know, our gifts and talents into business and what that looks like. And so, like, for example, when you talked about being able to sell cameras, I was in a multi-level marketing to pick up money years ago. And, you know, I learned a lot through that. But if I were to sell something like cameras, which I love photography, but I haven't caught up to the 21st century how to be digital camera savvy, but maybe I still could. But then there's the aspect of, I'm not very tech savvy either. And so then it behooves me to ask, well, how much should I invest in educating myself? But if I invest in educating myself now, I'm kind of stuck with how to support myself. I just kind of keep running around in circles.
Yeah, sure.
And so how do you translate you got to know yourself. I know myself. I can tell you.
Right.
I'm taking the StrengthsFinders test, and I have mercy.
Let me jump in, Rita.
Okay.
Let me jump in here. On radio, we got to move pretty quickly. Yeah. I appreciate your question and your heart. A couple things I want to respond to real quickly, and that is, just because you aren't being supported as a missionary, don't think that you aren't in full-time missions work still. You ought to be in your ministry 100%, even if you're making $250,000 a year. Don't think that there's a change in terms of where your heart is and what you want to offer. The key is, how can you continue to be in ministry, to do the thing that your heart is drawn you to, and still create significant income for yourself and your kids that need to go to college? And you can. I mean, I have here in my office, I have a beautiful, beautiful painting on the wall that was done by a young man who came to me as a pastor, had a dramatic conversion in his own life and felt like the most godly thing he could possibly do is be a pastor. Got ordained, went to seminary, got ordained in his pastor of little church. They were paying him peanuts, as they do beginning pastors. He was working as a desk clerk at Holiday Inn during the week just in order to keep the lights on in his house. And my question to him was, you know, who sold you this bill of goods? And he was like, what do you mean? Isn't this the most godly thing I can do? I said, no, it doesn't fit you in any way. You're trying to be something you are not. I said, what is it that makes you really come alive? And he described going into a room in his house, turning on Beethoven or Mozart, and he would paint these dramatic paintings. He never sold anything. I had him quit everything he was doing. And for 4 years, he did faux finishes, where he would use brushes, sponges, rags, create these dramatic effects on people's walls. But in that period of time, established himself as an artist. Today, he's making 10 times the money he ever dreamed of making as a pastor. But here's the interesting thing. In that, we didn't approach that as the best way to make money. We approached it first and foremost to follow the talent, the passion that he had, the gifts that God had given him. And in doing that, in a strategic way, created unlimited income for him. But the other part of that is people would look at that and say, well, he walked away from his calling. No, he didn't. He said, as a pastor, people knew what to expect of me, what I was going to say. Now I'm just the artist. People share their hurts, their fears, their vulnerabilities with me. He says, I have way more opportunity to minister today than I ever did as a pastor. That's the power of an authentic fit. So don't approach this, Rita, as just a way to make money. Go right back to what is the calling of your heart. How can you put legs on that? There does not need to be a distinction between ministry and secular work. That's an artificial dichotomy that we do as Americans. You will not find it in the Bible anywhere. People who were woodworkers and jewelry people and craftsmen were honored just as much as priests were. So follow your heart, but then create a real business model, and you can be successful.
By the way, Dan, we should mention the website, because I know you have a number of resources and opportunities for people to dig in a little deeper. It's what, 48days.com, right?
That's right. Yeah, a lot of resources there to help people with the questions, just like we're addressing here.
Sure. The number 48days.com. Give you some great resources, some help beyond our conversation today here. Let's take another call. Peggy is listening in the Detroit Lakes and has a question about kind of organizing creative ideas. Peggy, you're on with Dan Miller. Go ahead.
Hi, Dan. I really appreciate all of your writing. I have a quick question. I know that we are pressed for time. I want to know, how do I go about prioritizing? I have too many creative ideas, and I'm not sure where to focus my efforts. I have two in particular, one that I have felt for a long time for the Lord, I really feel that the Lord has called me to, but in the last couple of years, I've discovered a couple more avenues that would make more money and be more practical, probably, for me to actually follow. How do I decide? How do I determine? And how do I focus?
Sure. Yeah, great question, Peggy. What I would do is get all your ideas down. That's a wonderful starting point to have more ideas than you could possibly do. But it is that at the starting point. If you stay there, you know, you can't do everything. Somebody who is an old Chinese adage, you know, the man who chases two rabbits catches neither one. Well, what I would encourage you to do is put all your ideas down. Get 20 ideas, but in a 30-day period of time, narrow those down to four or five. Knowing what it is you know about yourself, knowing how you're wired, what God has gifted you with, narrow those down to the best four or five. Do a little bit more research, and then choose one and move forward. Doesn't mean that you aren't able to do some of those other ideas or that you don't have the calling to do some of those other ideas, but ultimately you have to choose one. Choose one and then create a plan to move forward, and don't second-guess yourself for a year. Don't look over your shoulder wondering, should I have done one of those other ideas? Just do one. Now, when you mentioned there are some other ideas that would make more money, that's a pretty dicey kind of thing to decide in advance. I mean, I can look at some of the things that, I mean, I'm just outside my window here, we've got a new eagle that's sculpted out of bronze. It's a different one than I mentioned a little bit ago. But the gentleman doing that, I mean, he could have looked at, he was in an IT background, and he could have looked at that and said, well, gee, I could get $100,000 a year salary doing that, and I don't know of any bronze sculptors who are making that kind of money. But again, if that's the desire of his heart, which it is, the way he positioned himself, you know, he does pieces that are at the entrance of universities and hospitals. He's done a series of busts that he was commissioned to do called Life Changers, where he's done Truett Cathy and Tony Dungy and people like that. Now, he makes a whole lot of money doing that, because that's the key. The key is if it's a fit for you, money can show up in ways that you could have never anticipated. Again, it's not just happenstance, it's not luck, but if you're strategic about it, follow your heart first and then structure ways to have it be financially profitable.
Good words. Thanks, Peggy, for the call. Dan Miller is author of the book 48 Days to the Work You Love. It's the new 10th anniversary edition, revised and expanded, just out here a few months ago. And we've got some copies available. It's 877-933-2484. It's 877-933-2484. Dan's president of 48 Days LLC. And he helps to blend our natural skills and abilities, our unique personality traits, and our dreams and passions into meaningful work. Coaches and counsels. He's a leading vocational thinker and best-selling author, and we're happy to have him with us today on Connecting Faith. We're going to talk a little bit about those that are on sort of the, we start out the program talking about those just out of school looking for summer jobs. How about those that are maybe approaching a retirement age and needing something to supplement or to provide income. We'll get his perspective on that in more in just a moment on Connecting Faith.
Stumble to the kitchen, pour myself a cup of ambition, and yawn and stretch and try to come to life. Jump in the shower and the blood starts pumping. Out on the streets, the traffic starts jumping. With folks like me on the job.
Remember that one?
I do. Yes, that's right. Yeah, yeah, you're kind of
my neighbors.
They're working 9 to 5. Is that right, Dan? They're, yeah.
Well, so you brought in one of my neighbors with a theme song there. She lives just down the road.
Does it, Dolly? Does it? Okay, yeah. Well, she's got a. That was we could all relate to that back in the day. Of course, now people are working the 4-hour work week and all sorts of things and finding ways to. It's a lot about income streams, and the world of work is a lot different. I know we've talked in the past about kind of contract employees, those kinds of things. I did want to get to this. Anonymous caller who left a message says, can you speak, Dan, more about getting out of debt? Because he said it's been overwhelming me. He's 62 years old and unemployed. And, there's one thing about being, 17 and looking for work. But if you're 60, 62 looking for work, that's a whole different ballgame.
Well, it is. But you bring a whole lot more to the workplace than the 17-year-old does. Hmm. You really ought to have a whole lot more value. Because of the life experience and expertise that you've developed, it ought to give you more options from which to choose. And if there's debt there at 62, that's not an uncommon phenomenon. I would encourage you to stay optimistic, but to get in the game and leverage what it is that you do best. What is it that you bring that has unique value to the table, whether that be to get a job, and certainly there are companies that are looking for competent 62-year-olds. That's not an obstacle that we sometimes are led to believe. They want people who have a work ethic, who are responsible and reliable, and have polished work skills. On the other hand, you are probably a better candidate to do something on your own. I mean, the age category that you're in now is the hottest age group for starting businesses because you have such a wide variety of experience from which to draw. So you can get in the game with something that really makes sense. And to me, the opportunities to make money are much, much greater in doing something on your own than trying to find a JOB.
Yeah. Well, and I would think, too, just even from the networking side of things, that, right, you would certainly have a wider range, it would seem, of potential markets or at least people that you could get some advice from.
That's right. You really should. Yeah, draw on your network, spread the word, let people know what it is that you're doing, and you can do a lot of creative things and have them reward you financially.
Now, one of our callers earlier was talking about, should invest in going back to school. I know we've had conversations about that, the idea of sort of always continuing to learn. But, I heard a conversation not too long ago and talked about, well, college educations, you don't have time to sort of just take courses to make you well-rounded. You have to get in and be pragmatic, and it's all about learning a skill or trade. What are your thoughts about, continuing education, at least higher-level education?
When you frame it as such, Neil, I'm a big fan of continuing education. That should continue till the day we die. This idea of you get a degree, so now that's the end of your education, and that's ridiculous. If you haven't kept up, I got a degree from The Ohio State University a whole long time ago. That doesn't have a whole lot of value. People are going to want to know, what have I done in the last 6 months? What kind of projects am I involved in? What are they going to find when they Google me? Those are the things that make you valuable. So I'm very cautious, though, about encouraging people to go back for a traditional college degree, especially if they do have some valuable life experience. It may not make a whole lot of difference to just add some kind of an acronym behind your name, depending on what it is. Now, if you want to be a brain surgeon or an attorney, then by all means, go through the academic process. But 90% of the opportunities out there aren't really connected directly to some kind of a degree program. And the companies are more interested in, can this person perform? Can this person deliver? I have the people that I have on my team here, I don't recall that I've asked for a resume from anybody. What I want to know is, wow, show me the last 5 book covers that you developed. Show me the last marketing campaign that you put together. I mean, those are the kind of things I want to look at, and those validate a person's value here, and it has nothing to do with the degrees that they have. That's more and more the case out there. And to go get a degree, now here's the thing. Some people go back to get a degree when they are unemployed, thinking that, well, this must be the magic thing. And all they're doing is choosing a socially acceptable way of procrastinating. They come out, they're still the same person. It doesn't matter that they have a degree behind their name, they're the same person. And a lot of times working on personal skills and taking a Dale Carnegie program or getting involved in Toastmasters will do more to explode your career opportunities than just getting another degree. Complicated issue. There's no cookie cutter solution, Neil, but be very, very careful about especially incurring debt for a college degree. Seldom would it be justified.
Well, in your book, 48 Days to the Work You Love, the new updated version, you have a new chapter in there about, you know, who would hire me. And I thought, well, I guess regardless of your age, that's one of the questions that we have to address, because at some point along the way, if we're going to work for somebody else, we need to get them to agree that we have some value to add.
That's right. We do. And that comes – there are companies, well-known companies like Microsoft and Google, who in reading a resume, if they look at it at all, start at the bottom. They may be more interested that you painted houses to work your way through college than the fact that you got a bachelor's in – political science. They're more interested in those things that make you a well-rounded individual, that show how you solve problems, how you connect with other people and network, than they are with what kind of knowledge you put into your head. Knowledge is very ubiquitous at this point. I mean, if you have any kind of a smartphone, you can find out what the capital of Afghanistan is. You don't have to memorize that. So knowledge by itself doesn't have the power that it once had. It's other kind of things that make you a valuable person in the marketplace, and those things usually don't come from sitting in a classroom seat.
Dan, we got a couple minutes left. The anonymous caller left a question. Said her and her husband are wondering about starting up their own sauerkraut company with the kitchen at their farm, but they might not be insured. It could lead to a legal problem. So maybe some questions about something. We got a couple minutes left. Any ideas on a situation, a startup business at home?
Well, I'm a big believer in startup business at home, and you can do a lot of things. You can cater meals and do a lot of things. But if you start selling a product commercially, then there are going to be requirements about the kitchen that it was prepared in, and rightfully so. But even at that point, if there's enough demand for your sauerkraut, then you can lease 3 hours a week at a commercial kitchen that's not being used in that time. It doesn't mean a big investment. Just work out something with somebody who has an approved kitchen with regard to the health requirements, and use that. But I'm a big believer in, if you got that special recipe or something that people respond to, sure, pursue that. You know, we have a lot of events here on our property, and we have people who cater those events. And for the most part, we have people who just do it as a mom-and-pop operation, not some big franchise name. We love the people who are just trying to do something significant and make a unique experience, and you can have a lot of success in that space without any kind of complications.
Well, as you said, we probably just need to think outside the box a little bit. We don't have to gear up with massive infrastructure. There are other ways that we can partner or cooperate and make use of facilities and things already there.
Absolutely. Yes, indeed.
Well, Dan, been great conversation. Again, just say a word about what kind of resources people can find on your website at 48days.com.
Yeah, 48days.com. We have a lot of the resources to answer questions, just like we're talking about here. Articles, blogs I've done over the years, access to material, resources that we've got, live events. And we also have 48days.net. That's just a community of over 15,000 people now. People are just saying, I've got a dream. I want to bring it to life. And they link arms with other people. There's no cost to be part of that community, 48days.net.
Check that out as a great resource, and wish you well in the pursuit of your passions, your dreams, your skills, your ability, and your God-given Calling in Your Life, 48 Days to the Work You Love is the book we've been referencing with Dan Miller, president of 48 Days LLC, giving us some great insight. You can find out more on his website, 48days.com. Dan, always good to talk with you. Appreciate your good advice and encouragement for us today.
Well, thank you, Neil. It's always an honor to be your guest. I love the process of hopefully giving people hope and encouragement and inspiration to do new things, have new success.
Thanks for listening to this podcast from Connecting Faith. For more information about this show or our other audio available online, you can visit our Connecting Faith show page at myfaithradio.com.